Welcome to Women in WP,
a bi-monthly podcast about women who blog, design, develop, and more in the WordPress community.
Hi, welcome to Women in WP. I'm Angela Bowman.
I'm Tracy Apps.
And I'm Amy Masson.
Our guest today is Amber Hines. Amber is CEO of Equalize Digital, a website accessibility consulting firm that specializes in accessible WordPress development. Welcome, Amber.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
We like to start off each episode asking our guests how they got into WordPress. How did you get started?
So I started actually on WordPress.com in 2009. So way back when, I'm pretty sure I had like a Zanga blog or something like a long time ago. I don't know if anybody's even heard of that.
I had one of those.
I took a break from blogging and then I had my first daughter and we lived across country from family and we said, hey, maybe I should blog and share pictures of my kids.
So mommy blogger.
Yep. Totally mommy blogger. I lived on Nantucket.
I did that.
I have a huge following because I live on a cool island. Not a good mommy blogger because I'm not consistent, but you know, so I started on WordPress.com and within about 5 months, I realized I needed to be self-hosted because I got frustrated with, I think you could do some limited CSS stuff back in 2009 on WordPress.com, but not very much. So I moved to self-hosted and I was just having fun playing around with my website and teaching myself HTML and PHP and all that. And I had a few friends that were like, your website looks good. Can we pay you to do ours? And then all of a sudden I realized I can have a business. So that's how I got started originally was my mommy blog roots. And I have not blogged on my personal blog for a very long time. I keep saying I'm going to, and I'll post like one blog post and then I won't again for months.
It's really just like the gateway drug to web development. I feel like, cause I used to blog a lot and then I'm like, I haven't blogged in forever, but I got into web development because I was having fun, you know, like making designs and then doing that. And then I was like, oh, I can make websites for all these other things. And then the blogs just kind of go on the wayside.
Yeah. You get so busy doing work that you don't do as much writing.
They say hire the people that have the most out of date website because they're usually just because they're busy with doing client work. At least that's what I say about mine because it's so out of date.
Yeah, that's what our... So Equalize Digital is part of our agency and it was a shift from our agency. And so that's Road Warrior Creative is the parent company. And if you go look at that website, it's like, I don't know, 5 years old. And I'm just like, it's so, every time I look at it, I'm like, it's so bad. I hate it. But we just built a new one and a new brand. And we're like, whatever, we'll just abandon that one. I don't know.
I do the same thing.
It still brings in leads. So I guess, I don't know.
Start a new brand. Like when your website gets outdated, just...
I'm guilty of doing this for my personal sites.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this site. Redirect. Redirect.
This site is really old. I just made another one and I just.
Redirect.
I mean, there was a good reason for us having a name change too. So it did make sense. It I hate the website, but. I'm going to go try and look at that website now to see how bad it is.
Now, I think that it needs to be in the show notes.
Absolutely. I mean, it'll make people feel like, oh, okay, well, I'm not alone.
Yeah. So 2009, when you got started, when did you kind of, did you ever get involved in the WordPress community? Like go to WordCamps or anything? Was that a thing for you?
Yeah. So I lived in Nantucket and it's an island, for people who don't know, off the coast of Massachusetts, about 30 miles off the coast. It's pretty small. There's only 11,000 year-round residents. My husband was a chef, and that's why we moved there. He ran a restaurant there. Oh, nice. And it was great. It was the best place to live, but there's no one else that does anything. And to be honest, we didn't have very much money. So I left the island like once a year when we would leave to go to Target because there are no stores on the island. So I did not get into WordPress meetups or anything like that until we ended up moving off Nantucket. And in 2014, we moved to Fort Collins, Colorado, and I joined a WordPress meetup there. And I joined Girl Development also, if you're familiar with that organization. And that was when I really started to learn about things like not cowboy coding. Mm-hmm. And local.
But we're not supposed to cowboy code?
Oh, yeah. So I'll tell you what. I'm our CEO. I don't do very much development ever. But every once in a while, I'll like help out on support. And I get in so much trouble with our developers because what I'll do is I'll be like, well, I know. So I'll just go fix it. This is so bad. I fix it in the theme editor and then I go over to Bitbucket and I make a commit on Bitbucket. And they're all just like, did you commit that on Bitbucket? That means you did it on a live site. And I was like, well, it didn't break. But yeah, you know, I am not our developer anymore.
Sometimes you can just log in, make a hex code change, and you don't need to do the whole staging stuff.
Exactly. I'm like, if it's a site I don't have locally, like,
you know, I'm going to defend some of those changes are okay.
As long as you, you know, commit it so other people can pull it down, like it's good, right? So and I moved to Fort Collins, and that's when I really started learning and doing all that. And I actually got involved with WordCamp Denver. So I was an organizer for WordCamp Denver for 2 years. And we now live in Texas. We've moved a lot. And I co-organized the Georgetown WordPress meetup, although I will admit that we've been taking a little bit of a COVID hiatus. Just because we were forced to in the beginning, and then both myself and my co-organizer, who's Bill Erickson, have been working on launching new brands. So we said, well, let's not do too many remote help sessions. So
you're with Bill Erickson there? I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
He is so freaking cool.
He is. He's very awesome. And it's kind of funny. So when I first started with WordPress and I moved over to self-hosted and I started looking that I was looking for themes and I was like, okay, I decided to go with Genesis because there were tons of tutorials and it was great for me learning to code. And so I started following him and I definitely had a little bit of a fangirl thing, you know, like, yeah, wow, you're so
of
cool.
Of course.
And I met him at Pressnomics. And that's when I learned that he lived in Georgetown here where we live. And I was like, oh, my father-in-law lives there. And then some years later, we realized we want to be closer to family. So we moved down here and I messaged him. I was like, I don't know if you remember me. I know who you are. And he's like, oh yeah, I remember you. We met at Pressnomics. And I was like, yeah, so we just moved to town. So we got together and decided to start a meetup together because there wasn't one here, which is fun.
And did you and we crossed paths at the Denver meet of WordCamp. Yeah, yeah, totally.
I think, I don't know if we were on a panel together or
I don't think I was on any panels
or something.
Was the last WordCamp? What Denver WordCamps did you organize?
I organized 2015 and 2016, maybe 2015, 2016.
Did I? Okay, I did the keynote for one, and I'm like, which one did I?
They all run that together.
They run together, but I think I spoke at 2015 maybe.
Okay.
And so then I would have seen you at whatever. Yeah. And then did we ever see each other at the Fort Collins meetup?
I don't know. I mean, I was one of the main organizers for it for a long time.
So. I more recently started going and I've presented once or twice there. Mm-hmm. And I love
David
Hayes. Is that
a big meetup? Is it a large one?
At least in my experience and from like talking to other people, I feel like it's pretty big. Like the texting in Fort Collins is really cool. Colorado in general, I feel like does really well. And this is a little bit of a tangent, but one of the things I love about Colorado, and if you're in Colorado, it's good to know, but they do this competition every year called Go Code Colorado, which is through the Secretary of State. And the Secretary of State funds, it's a like an app development competition where they're trying to get people to use open data because Colorado is super into open data. And they do different competitions in different cities around the state. And then they have a final in Denver and the top three teams get $30,000 to build their app.
Wow.
Really cool. And I feel like that has helped a lot in our meetup. At least when I was there in Fort Collins, we had enough that we would meet twice a month. We'd have a developer focus and a user focus. So here in Georgetown, we pretty much do a user focus. Every once in a while, we tried in the beginning to like alternate or have, and it was like, people would come and they're like, we have no idea what you guys are talking about. I I was like, this is just me and Bill teaching each other things. I don't know, you know, like, so mostly we're user focused, but Fort Collins has a good like feel. There's a lot of people there and a lot of tech kind of stuff going on.
I love it. I just actually spent the weekend in Fort Collins. I live in Boulder, so I'm an hour away, but my daughter and granddaughter live there. So I went up for the weekend and just played with them. Like we spent all day at the park every day.
Besides WordPress meetup that I miss, I also miss the breweries.
And they have the best playgrounds too for little kids. They are
breweries and playgrounds.
That's right. And you can bike to the mall.
Also, in Fort Collins, they're the same a lot of times.
Mm. Makes sense. I'm from Milwaukee, so I totally understand this.
This culture thing we have going on.
Yeah. It's funny you were talking about back when I first kind of got involved in just the tech community in general here in Milwaukee. We had so much more. We had meetup. We had I think a web developer meetup. And then Meetup started charging. So then they branched off because, like, we're all web developers. So we did that. So then Web 414 came up. But then someone was like, oh, we need a web developer thing. So, like, then another one started up. And then there was, like, a web designer meetup that came. And then so it was, we had, like, these three different, like, levels just kind of all working together. But then, like, I don't know, it just probably wasn't sustainable, or, like, that culture seemed to just kind of shift where people weren't, you know, like, meeting up in person again. I wonder now, this makes me wonder if, like, now because we've been so isolated, that when we get back into where we can actually meet up safely, will that change? We'll be like, I'm gonna go to all of these things, or have we all
so used to staying at home that we won't do it? Yeah, I don't know. I think it'll be interesting to see too, because there's been some neat collaborations, like WordPress mega meetups and that kind of stuff, where a bunch of WordPress groups are doing virtuals. It'll be interesting to see how much of that continues.
Well, and I like that idea, because you're saying, you're like, oh, well, at Georgetown or whatever, you're like, they're user focused and just stuff. So the niche of developer, like, we want to do these hardcore, like, really complex things, is small in most localities, but then like national or international, like, there would be that interest. And so I could see that kind of those kind of specific, like, developer focused or UX UI focused within WordPress could really do well. Mm-hmm. Especially now we have all the technology, we're used to it.
Yeah, I know. Right? We were using Zoom because we're a remote company, so we've been using Zoom for a long time. And I used to always have to explain to my clients what Zoom was, because we're like, this is how we're going to meet with you. We prefer that over phone because we can share screens. And they're all just like, wait a minute, what? Uh-huh. Now everybody knows. It's great.
Yeah. Well, once this COVID stuff has passed and we are free to go places, I'm going to go to all the things and all the places. I don't care if I could do it over Zoom. I just want to be out and be with my people.
Yeah. There's definitely, you know, some of the networking stuff, especially in the conference side or the WordCamp side, you just don't get the same. And I know that there's some cool WordPress things that are more conferencey that have been happening, and they even tried to have sponsor, like, virtual sponsor titles, and it's not the same. So
not the same. You're right.
I'll definitely go to those kinds of things. But yeah, I don't know. I have moments when I'm kind of glad. I'm like, it's nice. Our youngest is 15 months old. So honestly, like, it wasn't so bad, like, spending more time with her last year than we might have otherwise.
That's nice. Yeah, I can totally see, like, it going both ways. But then also, you talk about, you focus on accessibility. And one of the big things that I have been noticing, well, especially when we're seeing so many things having to rely on digital, how much more crucial that accessibility for everyone is. So, like, the awareness hopefully has gone up, right? And hopefully that those kind of accessibility and access disparities will kind of be better or made better. What kind of things have you experienced within the company of, like, projects that you've been doing, especially when it comes to, like, accessibility and kind of readjusting to kind of life online versus in person?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, you know, it's interesting, the conferences and digital event space. I feel like I'm not seeing as much progress on the accessibility side as I would like to see, to be honest.
Yeah, same.
I have a couple of connections that I've met through prior events, or I'm a member of the International Association of Accessibility Professionals, which is great if you're looking to learn about accessibility. I highly recommend it. And that's like an ongoing conversation that I've been having with some of them. There's one woman, her name is Marilyn. She's fabulous. She spoke at WordPress Accessibility Day, so she has a talk about that. She is a deaf person, and she talks a lot about captioning and that kind of stuff. And it's interesting, like her just talking about Zoom and the challenges that it has presented for her. I wish I would see more, even a lot of diversity and inclusion conferences fail to think about accessibility.
Yeah.
Which is crazy to me that we don't think about that. And so I think that's one thing that we actually had a fair number of live conference clients that we've been working with for a number of years. And some of them have just gone on hiatus, and some of them have tried to transition to online. And so it's something that we personally, as an organization, have been trying to be like, hey, this is something you should think about. But it's hard, and it's hard, especially for like those events that were in person and they were getting a lot of their funding. One of our really big conference clients, they lost more than half their revenue last year, you know? So then to say, you should pay somebody $200 an hour to do live captioning of your event is really hard when they're just trying to think about, how can we transition to online? Now we're debating, you know, we used to charge people $500 for a ticket. Now we're maybe charging them $40. Like, and there's fewer sponsors because the sponsors are like, yeah, not worth it. So it's hard. And I think that's probably one of the biggest pain points, I think, in accessibility, is figuring out how to make the value really obvious to the companies, whether it's an event or just like a website accessibility, how to make that value make sense to them. But also, like, how can we make it affordable? I know there's a lot of companies like ours, and I mean, we've tried really hard to be thoughtful about how we do our audits and pricing for that and all that kind of thing. But, you know, I've talked to other individuals at companies where, you know, they're like, our audits start at $15,000 or $20,000. And I'm like, you know, for a small business owner, that's less than what they paid for their website. They're not going to do that.
More than what they paid for the website.
Or sorry, yes.
A lot more.
It's more than what that's what I said. It's more. It's a lot more, right? If they're thinking I paid like $5,000. So then it's like, you know, trying to figure out how can you make this affordable, or what can we do? Like, can we get more templates or out of the box WordPress themes that are accessibility ready? And then what can we do to train people that are doing their own content creation so that it's easier for them to make their websites accessible without having to go hire a company that's going to charge them more than they have in their budget?
Well, and one of the things that, especially with web development, when I do and when I talk through, like even when I'm doing product design, accessibility doesn't have to be a huge cost, but that requires you to start thinking about accessibility right from the first, like, the first meeting, like right away, because then you're thinking through it and then being able to build that in, so you're not then spending twice as much or three times as much to try to like fix up things that could have been just done during the development phase. And one of the things, like, I did see, because I've been noticing a lot with, you know, with captions and such. One thing, I was a speaker at WordFest, and what I really kind of liked first, what they did is, all of our talks were pre-recorded and we had to submit them early on. Mm-hmm. And they said, and here's where you put your caption file. And I was like, oh, okay. So then there was like this talk about, here's some of the tools to use this. And I was like, oh, so now all the pre-recorded, all the sessions had captions in them without having to have that extra cost. But that was that balance between what's a live event and then what's pre-recorded, and then they had the questions afterwards. And I thought it was a good balance, and it allowed for a little bit more accessibility considerations without adding the cost to it.
Yeah. Well, and I think it's great too that they just said, here's where you put your caption file. Mm-hmm. So the assumption is everyone's planning to give us captions, right?
Exactly.
And
exactly.
A lot of people probably wouldn't have thought of that, you know.
Exactly. And then there was this talk of like, oh, what, where do I get this file? And they're like, well, try this. Even just the free version of like, we'll get you this because you know, your talks were 30 minutes. So that falls within this free thing. I was like, oh, look at that. That's interesting. It works really well. So, yep.
Yeah. Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I was just going to say, I noticed that you had instituted something when you organized WordCamp Denver to try to ensure that more women were speaking. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so the first year that I was a WordCamp Denver organizer, we, at least at that time, the way we handled speaker applications is they went onto a Trello board, and it was sort of organized by the categories they were in. And then there weren't a ton of us organizers, so we all kind of would go and we would drag them over to like, these are ones we think are interesting. And I started to notice, I was like looking at all the names and I was thinking, and I don't think we didn't ask any diversity questions on the speaker application, which I'm actually a huge proponent for. I think we should have quotas and we should ask that because it makes for a much better conference in my experience. But I was just looking at the names. Of course, you can't fully gender people based on their names, but it became pretty clear that from at least what the names looked like, that we had selected zero female speakers. And we were we hadn't notified anyone yet, but it was like, they're like, okay, we think we have our list. And I looked at it and I was like, wait a minute. So I said, everyone pause. I'm gonna go through, because we did have flags where people could say we're from Colorado, because we were like, we're gonna give preference to people from Colorado, like some of those things. So I literally went through and I either gendered people, or if I couldn't tell, I would like look at their LinkedIn or try and see, can I figure out? And I started putting flags on female, 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 because, and I was like, so look at this, like these are all the women who applied to speak, and we literally selected none. And so I said, we have to do something about this. We have to go back and revisit. And I actually, we do a lot of work with Lesbians Who Tech, which is a conference in the LGBT.
I love them. Yep.
Yeah. So they've been a client of mine since 2014. And one of the things that I love about Lesbians Who Tech, I don't know if you've ever been to a Lesbians Who Tech event.
I was at the first, the one in San Francisco, the first event that they had. It was so much fun.
Yeah, I've never been to San Francisco, but we've been to the New York one. And then when they do like the road shows, sometimes we'll go, depending on how close it is. Mm-hmm. But Leanne Pitsford, who is the founder, she has always from the very beginning said that we're going to have diversity quotas on our speakers. And that is the most, not just from a gender perspective, diverse conference, but also from a racial perspective, very like the most diverse conference I have ever been to. And if you go look, you can see, I don't know what their exact stats are, but they like will get like a certain percentage of people who identify as Black or African American, Latinx people, like all that sort of thing, people on the whole gender perspective. So it's not only women, it's not only lesbians, even though that's their name, like they always have allies too. And they have male speakers and trans speakers and all that. And it really brings a lot of value to the conference. And so that was one thing when I came on and I saw that at WordCamp Denver, and it wasn't intentional. Nobody was saying, it was just, they were just looking at the talk names. But I think the thing is you have to sort of think like, what's going to create a good, well-rounded user experience of our conference, right? Attendee experience. And the more diverse of voices you can have, the better it is. And it's also good, I think, for WordCamps. Like sometimes we might get like the big name people and get all excited, which is awesome. But if you only pick people like that, or you only pick people that have been in the industry for a really long time, they might bring stuff that is not as helpful to somebody who's just getting started. Like sometimes it's great to have a speaker who I've never talked at a conference before, and I've only been working with WordPress for a year, but I'm excited about this thing, you know? And mm-hmm. and and attendees can relate to that because there are going to be attendees that are new too. And then that might inspire them to talk. And so that's one thing that I thought, you know, besides the gender, but also looking at, like, I think it'd be great to ask people, you know, how long have you been doing WordPress? And then say, we're going to choose at least 10% of our speakers have to be, you know, 2 years or less or something like that. Right. And not just trying to get the big WordPress superhero names, that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, and one of the things you said, like, that, you know, the whole, like, I know people think of, like, oh, well, with these quotas, you know, like, what is that? Then you're trying to stack it this way. I'm like, no, really, because we have to be intentional to break that, because we just things that are subconscious that we don't even realize that go within our decisions is going to favor the status quo or the things that we're used to. And so, but then also if we're at the deciding table and we are the people that are very well prominently displayed on the speakers and the organizers, and then we will also be the attendees, but you have someone come in of a different color, a different race, a different background, and they don't see themselves on the stage, they think, well, am I welcomed here?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Is this a place for me? So having that intentionality is only going to, like, help everything, because then people will learn something from others and it's going to welcome more people into that group and make them feel like you are a part of this and you are valued. And that just, I mean, that just benefits everyone.
And that's mm-hmm. why Tracy and I are here, because we met at a conference that had, like, no women. Well, yep. It did. It was, but it was like, we counted. It was like 12%, you know? Yeah. Yeah. And
I noticed that at the very first WordCamp US, and, you know, there were women speakers, but it was maybe like 25%. But if you notice from 2015 to the last one, which was, I think, 50%. And somebody had to have made the point to do equality with women versus men speakers at that point. I think it had to have been a conscious decision.
Well, and I remember that 2015 WordCamp because I think it was in 2013, I wasn't chosen to speak, but I was, like, really a part of the community, the local community, because they were going after the titles. Mm-hmm. Of the people. And so I went to the organizers and I said, I don't like this stuff, you know? And I said, I'm sorry, but you have to allow me to speak. And I got really, I had this very strongly worded email and just like, this is who I am. This is what I do. I am a part of this. And you have to find a place for me to speak. And I was just like, yeah, they fine. But they had all their, but then in 2015, the one that you did, I was, I think, more like invited, like the thing Patrick came to me and said, hey, we want you to do a talk. And that may have been the one where you said, whoa, it's all men. Because then someone came to me and I hadn't even applied, I think. And they're like, we understand that you know about security. Could you give a talk? And I was like, oh, well, I was begging to talk a couple of years ago and had to wedge my way in. It might have been 2012, actually. Something, there was something that happened that it was just like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. But when I look at the WordCamp Denver roster for that year that you worked on it, it's all the women that I know in our community were speaking there. And there's so many. And it was, like, amazing. And so I think that, that effort that you put through really brought these are women people know, they relate to, and they're already a part of the community, and to not see them there would have been weird.
Mm-hmm. And so you think about good. Like you, like how you were like, oh, wait, I need to do this. How many women would do that? We're like conditioned to not do that. Mm-hmm. And so, and I think that was one of the big things. So when we started this, was like, we want to be intentional in inviting people, because, you know, we've had so many people like, oh, well, I don't know. I just did this. I just made this largest plugin, most popular plugin to do this, because I couldn't find something. And I was like, just like, if,
that's amazing.
Exactly. That's amazing. And I could guarantee, I know a good percentage of men, very, very capable, and would not in a flaunting way, but they would like lean into that and be like, I have done this. We as women, we were like, Well, I mean, okay, I guess I kind of did that, you know, and that we're just conditioned with that, with the society. And so sometimes that requires that, yeah, we're inviting and reaching out to women or people of color, or those that we don't see. We're intentionally doing that. That's just because they are not, they're conditioned or wouldn't step up in, because they don't feel like that's their place. But so, but it's still like, that's that, that balance there. And I think that's one reason why we, like, with all the guests that we've had on the show, we've been like, people are like, oh, I never thought about being on a podcast. I was like, but you're amazing. Like, yeah. Look at,
why aren't you on 50 podcasts, right?
Exactly. This community, WordPress itself, would crumble without people like you. Like,
yeah.
So I'm curious, when you noticed that and that you hadn't picked any women, what was the ratio, if you remember, of women applicants to men applicants?
So I wouldn't be able to tell you an exact number, but I feel like it was, I don't know, it was easily double, if not more, male applicants. Mm-hmm. So that was, like Angela said, like, we actually went out and asked more women to speak. Patrick, by the way, has also done that for WooConf when he was organizing WooConf. So he's,
we love really,
which was the most amazing conference I've ever been to. It gives me goosebumps to think about it, because in terms of feeling inclusivity and diversity and like I belonged, it was the only tech conference I went to that I felt 100% good and not insecure at. WooConf. Mm-hmm. And I talked to Patrick. I said, I don't know what you did here, but you did something and it's amazing.
I spoke at WooConf in 2017 when my third daughter was 4 months old, and I took her with me. And they made me a nursing room, which was so nice. Like, I
that's what I remember. I actually met you.
Springer, she went. Oh, maybe that's where we met. Yeah.
And you were at the nursing room.
Yes. So, yeah. No. That's, it's a great car. I think, you know, so I think the thing that's interesting, besides like going out if you don't have them, is also trying to do, and this is great for WordPress meetups to do, and I believe we did this in Fort Collins the following year before WordCamp Denver, is we had a meetup all about like speaking at WordCamp. We talked about what do you need to do to apply, why you should do it, what are some ideas for topics, because it doesn't just have to be like crazy coding, like It could be SEO, or it could be how to write good content. It could, you know, like, it could be all these different things that people who have never been to a WordCamp might not know. But I think the idea behind that too was to try and encourage some people who wouldn't normally have thought about applying to speak and to give them the thought in their head, oh, this is something I can do. It's not scary. And I mean, WordCamps are great. Like, that is the best place to start speaking.
I agree.
So I think that's something that helped. And I know Girl Develop It too. Also, we did one for them. Girl Develop It is an awesome meetup if you're interested in learning more about code and networking with other women. So I think that's a big piece though too, is trying to get out the word. I saw, I want to say it was like Atlassian with their Teams conference, on their speaker application this year, it literally said, we are not going to only pick people that are experienced speakers. Like, they wanted to know who was a beginner or hadn't really spoken very much. And they wrote it. They're like, this will not hurt you to give us an honest answer here, because we are trying to, we will include mentoring too. So if you're nervous at speaking at a giant conference, it's okay. You can still apply. And then if we select you, we will mentor you and coach you and help you figure out how to be a good speaker, or how to feel comfortable, right? Which is like so cool.
Yeah, for me, I remember once I kind of realized, because I always thought, oh, I don't know enough code. I'm self-taught, but I knew it about design. And then it wasn't until I realized that, because I always just thought like, oh, well, the stuff I know, just everyone knows. It's just common knowledge. And then when people are like, oh, wow, I didn't realize you do that, I'm like, okay, well, that's valuable? Like, oh, so understanding, like, when conferences and WordCamps, they say, we're not only looking for developer talks, because people usually get intimidated by that. You can say, do you know something about SEO? And like, spelling it out and be like, wait a minute, I do that. Oh, I didn't know I could talk about that. And that just opens up a whole other world.
Yeah. And sometimes even just like case study type talks, I really love, I think are so interesting, where someone's just like, they're like sharing their website and the journey and building it, or or specific clients or something like that. Or they're talking about, here's this thing, this problem we had, and here's how we fixed it. And I feel like anyone who works with WordPress has a story like that, whether it's their own website or it's one they did for a client. And we can learn so much from those kinds of talks too.
I agree. I learn more from those than I do a lot of other ones, actually. Because something, I'm a person that I need to apply something to. I need like real life application to something for me for it to stick. So that I'm like, oh, I can relate to that. I can see it. It's I think you're right on that.
Yeah.
In terms of accessibility, I am working with the University of Colorado, and part of my contract is I have to have AA accessibility. And it's interesting because our budget, like you said, could double for, you know, if we were to have to hire an accessibility company. But I've run a lot of the CU sites through accessibility tools and stuff, and they're not all passing. And so what I do for my accessibility is I run a variety of tools. And I think about the colors. CU came up with brand colors that weren't accessible at one point. So I'm like, so they want us to pass accessibility, but the brand colors we're forced to use are not accessible. But then they changed it. And then they did come up with one color that wasn't black, that was accessible. And so we could use that for buttons, you know, because gold, light gold is not a good accessible color for accent. And, but yeah, so I run it through all the tools and stuff, and I just kind of work things until they pass. And I test with the keyboard. I make sure that I can navigate the site with the keyboard and stuff. But, you know, I feel like, wow, I'm not an expert. It takes hours though, for a single site to run through all of the pages and make sure like, oh, I use Facet WP plugin and the facets are not accessible. They're not, the inputs are not, don't have proper label, but I found some jQuery where I could do some jQuery to make a proper ID for the like select list and write in a label in the HTML so it would pass accessibility. So I've done things like that. Do you feel like, do you feel like kind of novices in that way? Like I am, I'm a developer, so I know how to understand these things, can manage to make sites accessible, and how much do you feel like you really have to bring, you know, at what point do you feel like you need to bring the experts in for the accessibility? Like more for apps or, you know, what?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't call yourself a novice, right? If you're a developer and you know how to do code.
Okay. Okay.
maybe you haven't done as much on the accessibility side, but you're definitely not a novice, right? So, because I think that, so a big portion of accessibility, which I'm sure you know, is just how the content is entered on the page. And, and that's, you know, a big thing that maybe a lot of people don't think about as much. Like it's theme, but it's also in a lot of ways, it's just how content is entered. And certainly anyone can use different sorts of testing tools to figure that out. Do you use a screen reader when you do testing?
No, but I would like to. And so I kind of would like, you know, and we can put this in our show notes too later, so we don't have to necessarily have you list them all out, but I would like to use this opportunity since we have you that we could educate our listeners, and we could put in the show notes for anyone listening some tools that that you would recommend.
Yeah. You know,
recommended by Amber Hines.
So Macs all have VoiceOver on them, and that is free. It's included in a Mac. If you are on a PC, then I typically recommend NVDA, and NVDA tends to work best in Firefox, but you can use it in Chrome too. Those, and NVDA is open source and free. The other really popular screen reader that has a large user base is JAWS, and is not open source and it costs money. So if you're just trying to figure out like screen reader testing, that might not be where you start. And I would say the way we do it is we do keyboard. So you navigate through, make sure your focus state is there. Your focus never gets lost the whole time down the page. And then we do a loop back after we've fixed everything that's keyboard problem. And then we do a loop back with screen readers, and we always test with at least two. And I would say if you are a developer and you feel comfortable sort of puzzling through problems, then 100% you can identify issues between the free scanning tools, whether you're using Wave, Axe, mm-hmm. if you're familiar with that, comes from DQ, mm-hmm. and it has Chrome and Firefox extensions, and it mm-hmm. puts the reports in the in DevTools panel. Mm-hmm. And I really like Axe. I feel like it's actually more thorough than Wave is. So if you, between those tools, and then also we have a plugin for WordPress called Accessibility Checker that does scanning similar, and it puts reports right on the dashboard and your post or page edit screen, which is really useful when you're handing the website off to a client and they're going to be adding new blog posts or editing content on a page, because it will show them right there, oh, hey, you missed a heading level, or your color contrast is wrong because your button, you didn't pick the right colors, even though WordPress also now has a little warning about that, which is great. So between that and doing the testing, I feel like anyone can probably figure out what the problems is or what the problems are. What is maybe more challenging, depending upon someone's ability and coding, is figuring out the fix for the problem. Mm-hmm. So I think most people can tab through, like we were just auditing a website that used a popular page builder, and it had like a blog post carousel. And when you hit tab, it tabbed to like blog posts that were not visible in the carousel. And it you had to go through, I don't know, like five of them, and you're just hitting tab. And the only reason I know is because I have it showing me where my focus is in dev panels. I have console set to log where my focus is. So I'm like, okay, I have to tab through an image and a title and a read more button, like for five blog posts. So it's like 15 tabs.
Oh, until you can progress on the page.
Well, but also before it even becomes visible on the three blog posts that are visible in the carousel, because it was going to the ones that aren't visible, right? So I think a lot of people, you could tab and be like, hold on, it's tabbing. I have no idea where I am. And but then that's where, if you don't have a lot of skills, you might be like, well, what do I do? Honestly, my response for that is there's no reason to have your blog post in a carousel. So you just get rid of the carousel. Like, it's way better than recoding this thing. Like,
yes.
Yes.
And trust me, I do so much. My other top secret on this, if you can't afford, we do user testing, and we work with students from Texas School for the Blind and Visually Impaired, which is amazing. We hire them, and we can get students that are really experienced, and also students that are not super experienced with the screen reader, which is useful too, because it wouldn't just be younger people. It could also be someone who is newly blind. They might not be as expert and they're just learning how to do it, could come on your website. But if you can't do a lot of user testing because of budgetary reasons or whatever, then I like Hotjar. Hotjar.
I like Hotjar.
So Hotjar, you put a JavaScript snippet on and it records sessions, so you can watch people navigate through your website. And what also is really useful is it tells you what device they're on and what browser. Mm. So you can see like all these different screen widths. Like, it's great for just like, oh, did we miss one little thing in our responsive? Like, maybe we need to adjust our break point here. But that's like one of our like things that is also really useful, because you can see like, how are people going down the page? What looks like they got confused on? Because accessibility, it's about like the digital functional, but really what it comes down to is it's more than meeting WCAG, web content accessibility mm-hmm, guidelines. Mm-hmm. It's about making your website usable.
Yes.
So part of accessibility is also having a navigation structure that makes sense. Having a sitemap in the footer of your page so they can get to anything quickly, right? And so I feel like anyone can make their website accessible as long as they're thoughtful and they're sort of conscientious. And that goes back to the budget, right? It doesn't necessarily have to be a big budget, but there will be some problems that come up that someone who is more on the designer or like the WordPress power user side.
Well, like that jQuery problem, I had to use jQuery to solve the problem. Yeah.
Yes. So some people might not be able to do that. And so that's where you might want to hire, you know, a developer, or you might want to hire an accessibility specialist who can also be like, oh, hey, here's some other items you miss. And then there's things that are like nuanced that don't get caught by testing tools. So for example, our scanner and any scanner like Wave Axe, they'll tell you if an image is missing an alt, but it can't really verify the quality of your alt text. Mm-hmm. And so one thing we see a lot on our websites where clients are trying to be really diligent is they get overly verbose in their alt text and they put these like really long descriptions of images that are just like extraneous and don't make any sense and they're gonna slow someone down. Or another thing we see is they describe the image even though it's a linked image. And when you have a linked image, which is what we call a functional image, mm-hmm. the alt text shouldn't actually describe what the image is. It should describe the
link,
where it's going.
Yep.
So I saw this on a website last week and it was like, they were just saying like map icon, when really it goes to their contact page. Uh-huh. Click on it, you know, like that kind of thing. We're like, well, but you don't want someone to think if I follow this link, I'm getting a map icon, right? Mm-hmm. Or even like your logo in the homepage, it shouldn't just say logo. It should say like, you know, visit Equalize Digital's homepage.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and that's what's really confusing, because I think the SEO community really conflicts with the accessibility community, because in SEO, they're like, use your alt text for SEO. And accessibility is like, use your alt text for accessibility. And well, the two things me, do not I feel go like together.
They should, because good SEO is going to, like, if your site is, and for me, usability and accessibility should be the same thing, because otherwise you're just saying usability for only portion of my my audience is usable, but then the other part I'm not worried about. But technically, well, Google wants things that are going to be usable by everyone and resourceful. So I think they don't combat each other.
On all texts, they totally conflict, because if it is a linked image, it serves a different purpose than an image in the body content.
But I think the thing I always say if somebody says something to me like that is, you're not, Google doesn't like keyword stuffing. Like, that's a thing we used to do.
Exactly.
Like, make the alt text on every image on the page just have the keywords for that page, right? But Google's gotten smarter and they don't like that. And so, no, you should really describe your image, and it should make sense in the flow of the page as they're interacting. Like, there's a reason why you chose that image and you put that image in that position and not somewhere else. Like, it needs to make sense. And then if you do it that way, logically, and it makes sense, then it is good for SEO. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And trying to just like stick a bunch of keywords on it, or like repeat the post title on as the alt for them, mm-hmm. that's not good. People think that's good for SEO, but it's not. It might have been.
Yeah, exactly. And like, Google figures out like, oh, they're doing this to game the system. And then they're like, well, nope. And we just improved it. And now they are not on any of the first five pages.
People were like, I was on page one or two. And now all of a sudden, I can't even find my post anymore. Right.
Yep, yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I feel like it's only a matter of time before SEO becomes a ranking signal. Or sorry, accessibility becomes a ranking signal.
I think it already is.
I agree. Google also already gives you like a kind of like a prominence or priority for like responsive and mobile friendly sites. Mm-hmm. I think same thing. I agree.
I think it may be a little bit, but I think at some point they're going to straight up say to us, this impacts your rank in search. And I mean, hints on that is that Lighthouse includes an accessibility score. And also maybe 2 or 3 years ago now, Google put out it's like a developer focused course on Udacity that's free. So anyone can take it on accessibility. And I'm like, they're starting to put effort into this. It's only a matter of time.
Yeah.
So
nice.
Wow. Well, it has been a great conversation with you today. Before we go, can you tell everybody where they can find you online?
Yep. So I'm at equalizedigital.com. And I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So my LinkedIn name is just Amber Hines, all one word. And That's probably the best way to find me. You're also welcome to email me, amber@equalizeddigital.com. I love talking accessibility.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. Interested in being on the show? Sign up on our website, womenandwp.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and join our Facebook group to have conversations with other women in WordPress.